Welcome to ContenderCast, a global leadership and consumer industries entrepreneurship podcast centered on shining a light on bright ideas. And now, here's your host, Justin Hahnemann.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for subscribing and following. It's Justin Hahnemann, ContenderCast. We're shining a light on bright ideas. It's a Friday afternoon, and I get to talk to one of my friends today who also has her own business that you guys are going to love hearing about. If you're in retail, consumer goods, you're a startup launching new products, you're thinking about distribution, logistics, how do you get product to end customers? Like, we're hitting all of that today, and you're going to learn all about renewal logistics, because on the podcast is Courtney Folk. She is co-founder and CEO, and she lives around the corner from me, too. It's kind of cool, actually. Courtney, it's so great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. And yes, amazing that that we're neighbors.
A couple weeks ago, we were introduced through a mutual friend. And, we actually did a prep call for those of you that listen often. I don't usually do prep calls, but we would get on the phone just to kind of talk about the podcast. We talked about kind of our backgrounds and whatnot. And we got into like, hey, where do you live in town? You know, and I'm like, wait a second. I've walked past your house like every week. It's so hilarious. but that would be a whole nother podcast, right? Your house is like used in movies and all, like amazing.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Whole other podcast for another day. All right. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Courtney, and she is, again, the co-founder and CEO of Renewal Logistics. She also won the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Award, which is such a big deal in 2023. We'll dive into that also as part of our discussion today. But Courtney, before we get to Renewal, how about share a little bit about your background, how you got into kind of launching your own business?
Okay, cool. Sure. So my husband and I met 20 years ago, and we were both 23. And I was a corporate sales rep for Altel, which is now Verizon. And he was a chemist for the state of South Carolina for law enforcement. So he did kind of what you see on NCIS, but he says it's much more boring than that.
I do watch that. I love it.
So we both hated our jobs, and which is kind of the normal story before you strike out on your own, is that you got a bad boss, or the culture or community's bad or whatever. And that was kind of the case for both of us. And his parents had this little dry cleaning business, and we were like, why don't we just start there, get into it, see what we can do, see where we can take it. And so we got engaged. The next week I went in and I put in my notice at work, and I was like, I'm out of here. And we started, 20 years ago working for his parents. And prior to that, I was actually a graduate at Charleston Southern University, and he was at USC, which is South Carolina. And so we met right after college. And so this was very early. We were very young at this point. And so within a year of being in the dry cleaning business, we'd grown to become like the second largest in Columbia, South Carolina, which is where we lived. And then we were like, well, this is too easy. We need to figure out, this is as big as we can get this business at this point without spending a lot of money. And it's kind of a painful business to be in. So then we were like, okay, how do we use the same assets and equipment and expertise and do something else that's bigger that can scale? So then we got into insurance restoration, where we help customers who have house fires and water damages in their home to get their lives back together by cleaning all their apparel items and their fabric items in their home. Quickly grew that. Within about 4 years, we were the largest in the U.S. that's an independently owned company that does what we do. We cover like 10 different states. And then in 2013, so a little more than 10 years ago, we were approached by a giant brand, one of the top three brands in the U.S. They had 300,000 jeans that had mold all over them, and they had to ship to a big retailer, to like one of the largest retailers in the world. And they had 2 weeks to figure out what they were going to do with these. They were going to lose the relationship if they didn't figure out a solution. And so they were just like, no one else in the country can do this. Let me see if I can find someone online. So they found us online. They asked us if we could handle this type of business. We were like, yes, of course we can. And then they were like, well, it's 9 trailer loads of jeans.
Oh my
and we need
God.
It back in a week and a half. And by the way, July 4th is in the middle of this.
Oh my God.
And so it was a mess. So we kind of jumped, we thought on our feet and jumped to a solution. And Sold the deal on Monday, and by Wednesday, we had set up a new 25,000 square foot location, had 200 workers working two shifts.
Oh my God.
We're producing 27,000 units a day.
Wow. Yeah. And what's so fun is I knew none of that before today, even though we did our prep call and mutual friends and all. It's so fun. This is why I love doing this podcast. Okay, cool. So for those that are listening, you think about, like, as you're launching brands, and many of you have come on and talked about as you've scaled and grown beyond e-commerce and into stores and then more stores, and you get those orders, and it's okay at first, like, you're shipping from your home or you're making it in your kitchen, and then, you know, but at some point, it just gets to be a lot, right? And very large. And so what's really cool about Courtney and her business is they can help, and they're really good at this space. And so we're going to dive into how you can take advantage of that today. But Courtney, from that first order, what followed? Was it go out and pursue other similar type of brands? Or, like, how did you think about growing the business at that point?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what happened there was they were like, well, there's no way you're going to be successful with this. Maybe you'll get done in time. I can't even imagine you're going to do that. But once it goes in, and I wish I could just tell you the name of the big box wholesale place where these items were going, but I can't. But they were like, this is the most chargeback centric company that you can imagine. We're going to get killed with chargebacks. We're going to have millions of dollars in chargebacks. It's going to be awful. It was like the sky was falling. It was like every suit within this company is sitting around this table, pouring over this issue. Like, what are we going to do? And it went back in to, and let me just quickly tell you, just 30 seconds, paint the picture of what I mean. So these jeans had sticker labels down the side that had the size and color. They had trim items on the back, like the tags that go on the back of the pants. Sure. They had hang tags. They were in pre-packs. So they were in cases of 36 with 18 black and 18 navy blue and a 10 size ranges of each. Okay. All this had to be taken out. All of that stuff had to be taken off of these items. They had to be cleaned and processed, checked for mold to make sure there was contamination free, like test for mold afterward. And then all of that trim had to be put back on, all had to go back in the boxes. And we're dealing with, like, workers that literally, you know, most of them don't know how to read or write. And,
right.
You know, who can you find that quickly? It's temp workers. Right. And so anyway, they were just like, there's no way this is going to work. And, but it went back to this company and they got zero chargeback.
Whoa. Okay. So in bridging a bit of what you just shared, if you're listening and you're not kind of in retail or in kind of the space around shipping garments and whatnot, but you are receiving them in a pack size, right, Courtney, that needed to be broken down or changed, right? So just the way they came into you is not how they went back out. Is that correct?
For this particular job, for this particular customer, they did go back in the same case and they went out the same way. But normally, you're right. Normally, you get single SKU case packs. And then when you're sending them to a retailer, you have to break them down and turn them into multi-SKU case packs.
Amazing. All right. So picking up the story.
So this happened. Yeah, and then they were like, well, gosh, if you can do this, what else can you do? So then the next week we had a 1.7 million unit bra rebranding job to where we had to reprice every single unit that went into Target and change the name brand on it. And that relationship just grew and grew and grew and grew and grew. And they have like 25 of the top brands that we've all heard of. And so they were like, okay, well, when are you going to put a location beside ours? So took a few years for them to talk us into it, but we now have a very large distribution center that's like in the parking lot of their distribution center and or next door.
Wow.
And that's how it got started. And then it was word of mouth. It was like people would leave that company and they would be like, well, who do we use when they would go somewhere else? And they'd be like, well, we use Renewal Logistics. And so it's been awesome.
Amazing.
It's been great. And we just started kind of in the like last 5 years, we just started kind of marketing our services, like aggressively marketing. And so now we do a lot with medium and small brands that are trying to get into retail for the first time.
Perfect. Great segue. That's where I was heading next. So, you know, as I was talking to you before we hit record, and we were kind of reviewing so many of the founders that have come on our podcast, and a lot of their stories is similar, right? They start in their kitchen, they launch their own direct to consumer site, they're shipping out of their house, they get into e-commerce, like let's say they're selling on Amazon, and they're using fulfillment by Amazon or other, they might be on other marketplaces. Then they get picked up by a store. Things are getting more complex. Then they get a big order, right? So talk about where you can help out or plug in as you think about like that kind of timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you're right. Like with the brand, you know, you have to start with the idea, but then what really matters, if you're really going to sell, you have to figure out distribution. It's like a distribution play, right? You got to be able to get the product into people's hands. And so there's three ways to do it. There's direct to consumer, then there's marketplaces, and then there's brick and mortar. And so, you know, like we ship about 100,000 units a week into Amazon for FBA prep. And we ship, you know, millions of units all the time for D2C. And, but the big thing is understanding how to sell into retail spaces. And that's where there's other people who can do D2C just fine. And, also even some Amazon prep, but like, really that's the hard thing is shipping into retailers. And so you have to have like retailers are, you know, part of the reason why a lot of companies never really want to go into big box retail is because they're scared that they're going to get eaten alive by chargebacks. But if you have the right partner, they can protect you from that, and they can allow you to scale really fast. And they actually, there's a lot of things. So like when you first get started, you're packing these orders at your table, and then you know, get big enough to where you hire an employee. Well, then you have to make a decision. Okay, am I going to be a business that has a bunch of employees, or am I going to be a lean business where I don't have like, you know, another thing is like, if you look at your balance sheet and you have long-term leases on it, then that actually makes your valuation go down. So there's all these things you have to start thinking about as you start getting bigger. And it goes from, do you want to, you know, pick, pack, and ship and have one guy doing it? Or do you want to start having to build a team of people who do it and hire a manager, find the right location, you know, negotiate contracts with carriers? Like there's just a whole huge piece to that. And so most people feel like they want to stay lean and mean, and they want to focus on what they're good at and not have to get into all of those nuts and bolts. And that's what I love, is those nuts and bolts.
Totally. And that's so why what you just shared is like a big part of why you're here today. Talk about, for those that may not be familiar with some of the risks around chargebacks and other fines and fees that come with, you know, shipping in product at the wrong time, wrong format, and whatnot. Give us some examples of things that might drive a retailer to do chargebacks.
Okay, yeah, sure. So first of all, you have a ship window, and if you ship outside of that window, you're going to get a chargeback if it's too early. If you ship and too late in the window, like the last day or the day after, they can actually cancel the order on you and send all that product back, and then you're stuck paying for the shipping back as well as all the product that you just bought.
terrible.
And then, you know, it's awful. Like, and some of these companies literally do, you know, have a department where they have goals that they are set to in terms of how many chargebacks are they going to be able to get out of their merchants. So, I mean, it's a serious thing. And I mean, like a great example, Kohl's is a company we ship millions of units into each year. And we have one customer. What happens with chargebacks is you start off as an A vendor for them, and then when you start having problems, they start to compound.
Right.
So you become a B vendor. And then what happens is they inspect, like they go from like 1% inspection to like 5% or 10% or 20%. And then the cost per chargeback, let's say it starts as $35 a case because the ASN wasn't correct, which that basically means the units inside the box did not match what you sent.
Exactly.
And so that can be $35 to start with. But when you become like a B or C vendor, that can turn into hundreds and hundreds of dollars. We had one a couple of weeks ago where we were working with one. We've got a client that we've helped go from being like a D vendor. They were on the border of being an F all the way up to a B vendor. And they're coming off of these. But we were looking back at some of their chargebacks. They had one that was like $800 for a label where the barcode had like a bubble in the barcode.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, and I'll give you another example. As I mentioned in some of our previous episodes, you know, my wife and I have, you know, we had line of conversation card games and ring cleaner, and we were shipping all kinds of places through retail and Amazon. I wish I'd known you then. I'll never forget, like, I mean, like, we had a 24 pack, you know, of games that's going in. And if you're making margin on those games, let's say $4, like, you know, kind of net. And then there's chargeback. So of those 24, that's about 48, you know, whatever the dollars are, $80, $90. And then you start getting chargebacks. You're making such little margin on that case. And so it becomes, in sometimes, an upside down proposition, right?
Yep, exactly. 100%. That's why a lot of companies, that's why a lot of brands just avoid retail as long as possible. And, you know, and I totally get that. Like, I've got friends that have apparel brands and they, you know, they'll go and deal with the like small boutiques and they'll do wholesale like that, but they don't want to be in the big box stores because of that chargeback issue. But like, truly, if you really want to be a big brand, you want to be known, you have to be in those stores.
That's right.
Like, you really do. Like, yeah. If you have a CPG brand, you have to be in grocery stores. You have to be in Target. You just don't have a choice.
No doubt.
If you're really going to make something happen.
No doubt. So, okay. And then what is your model in terms of your revenue model? Where do you guys take a percentage, or is it transaction based, or is it per case, or how do you guys figure out what you're going to charge to folks that might leverage you? Because there would be costs around that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so the way we do it is like, okay, first of all, we are heavy duty industrial engineering type brains. Okay. So I don't know if you're,
I'm an
people
IE.
Have ever heard of.
I am an IE.
Say what?
I love it. Go ahead.
Are you really?
Yeah. I'm an industrial engineer. Georgia Tech.
Oh, that's
come on.
Cool.
Yes. Anyway, go ahead.
So, that is amazing.
I know. Yet another thing.
Okay. So then we you live know close all about time other. Studies.
Yes. Time studies. I did those in college.
Exactly. Well, we do them every day. And like, I will never forget my husband. I was like, man, your parents live out on the lake. It's going to take me 30 minutes to get there. And he's like, no, it takes 9 minutes to get to the stop sign. And I was like, oh, okay. This is cool. Like, you're smart. And that was one of the first times I realized how much I liked him, because he was like a personal trainer at that moment when I met him.
And, way anyway, off topic now.
Yes. We do that constantly. We are always doing time studies, and the people that really succeed in our business are people who are always challenging themselves to do things faster and look at how can things be done faster. And so the way our pricing works is you're going to have a few different pieces of the puzzle. So you have receiving. So when we bring the goods in from your factory, there is a cost associated with that, because we're going to have labor associated with it. And then there's going to be putting it away into storage. So then you're going to have a storage fee for monthly. And then there's going to be, whenever someone buys something, there's going to be picking. So we have to go and travel to the location where it's stored, pull it out of the rack, and then put it in a box. And then we have to package it, just like you would have to do. And so then you're going to have like the packaging cost. And then it goes to the carrier. So then you're going to pay for shipping costs for that with the carrier. But the good thing with us is that we have negotiated rates with carriers. So generally, a lot of that handling, it's almost like a wash. It may still be a little bit more expensive to outsource it, but but a lot of times you can cover a whole lot of that in our shipping discounts that we have. So that's kind of how the rate structure works. You know, we do have this kind of history of apparel and a center of excellence there. And so a lot of brands that work with us are ones that kind of have either their apparel and they have a lot of handling or returns, or we also work with drink brands or CPG brands that need to have things packaged in two or four, you know, like mixed flavor case packs, things like that. So there's a value added services kind of arm to our business. And so each project like that is charged separately, and it's all based on how much it takes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like a quick run of like 10 items and see how long it took us to do that. And then we'll cost it out based on what our labor cost is.
And no refrigerated, right? All shelf stable or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shelf stable.
Got it. And then, so rewinding the clock a bit. So you got the first big order, you know, you're getting things rolling. Have you had to add people over time and or scale from a, I'd say like a space perspective and or equipment perspective? And then how'd you figure that out, right? Did you and your husband didn't know the space, right?
No, we didn't know the space. I don't know how. I honestly, people ask me that a lot. And I think it really has to do with being a good person. And if you're in a community and people like you and trust you, they will help you. And so like that first project I told you about, where overnight we had a 25,000 square foot location set up. We had, number one, we were friends with a property manager that was in town. So we knew what buildings were available. He threw us a key that afternoon. It was like, go for it. We'll get the insurance worked out. All of our contractor friends, we called them up and we're like, hey, we need to have racks and rails put up. Can you help us over the weekend? And they were like, sure. Or, you know, whenever it was, like Monday night, can you do this? And they're like, yeah, sure. And then as far as people, I mean, we just have had really good relationships with agencies in the community. So we ended up on that project, we used a lot of temp labor. And as far as like finding good people, if you look at any of my social media stuff, you'll see that I'm constantly talking about our values and the behaviors that work within our company. And sure. If you want to be a great employee here or anywhere, here's what you need to make sure that you do. And I think that attracts a lot of people. So like finding talent is very easy for us.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think people want purpose, right? Not just all the other things that go with the business, but I think that's one of the great things you guys have done.
Thank you. It's not to say it's easy. It's hard. It's very sure. hard to find people. But, you know, it's a great problem to have. It's a great problem to have.
What's changed for those that maybe haven't, I don't know Courtney or her business. They've been doing this now for what, over 10 years? What's changed in that time? Not for you, the business, but like, what have you seen change in the industry, if anything?
Oh man, so much. So when we started, Amazon was like the wild, wild west. You could send stuff in and it was like no big deal. And then there was, you know, this tightening of processes within Amazon, like any business that matures. So that's one thing that's changed a lot. And then I think, you know, there was this huge expansion of space and companies that were in the 3PL space during COVID because everything was going that way. And then now it's kind of going back to where most people are excited to go shopping and have some brick and mortar experience for some things, not everything, but some things. So, you know, I think there's been a lot there. I think that the change in labor when, you know, like labor prices for us, like skyrocketed 40% one year, it was insane. And so, you know, there's the work ethic change that's happened with people. There's I don't know of anything. It's, you could have probably asked the question, what stayed the same? And you'd probably right. be able to narrow it down.
right. That way. Maybe easier. I can imagine. What about requirements from retailers besides Amazon? Has that been pretty consistent, you know, or has that changed?
It changes all the time. So like, you know, okay. So a good example, most retailers are now requiring that everything have RFID tags by 2027. So that's one new thing that's kind of new. It's been around for a while.
Is that only fashion and apparel or is that other products as well?
It's definitely fashion and apparel. But I think it's also, it's like anything that's above $10, a value of above $10 is being recommended to put an RFID tag on it. So I'm not sure about soft drinks and things like that. Actually, I'm not sure kind of what that industry, how they're doing it. But like, I know things in Target, cosmetics, like, you know, a lot of that type of stuff is all going to have to be RFID.
Interesting. And do you guys do that or is that done by the manufacturer?
Yeah. So any product that's already here, you're going to, you know, we do it for companies. And then if it's product that's going to be created at the source, it's definitely a lot cheaper if they can just have it done at the source. Avery Dennison, we just did a like webinar with them on what RFID is. And so they're a good resource for that. And Fineline is another one that's a good resource for that.
Yeah. Great partners in that space. For those that aren't familiar with RFID, they're tags that are built into your shirt or on labels and whatnot. They're great for inventory tracking, inventory counting. So instead of doing a physical count, but also it's good. You can use it for checkout in some places and also for, you know, reducing fraud in terms of products going out the store. So it's a lot of good use cases for RFID. It used to be a big deal actually back in like the late 2000s, but it was really expensive then. And now the costs have come down quite a bit for the tags and readers. So anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that was a big thing back in the day. Everyone was like, Walmart's going to this. We're going to have to do it. And then it was like, okay, right. Walmart decided not to.
Right. It was a mandate and then it wasn't and everyone dropped it. Interesting. Yeah. You were awarded the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Award just a year ago from when we're recording this. So talk about that. That's a pretty big deal in the entrepreneurship space. What drove you to apply and then why were you selected?
Man, you know, that has been one of the best things I have ever done in my life. I have been so thankful to be a part of that amazing community. So, you know, I'm in a women's network, and one of the people who was in the women's network was actually one of the people who runs that program. And so she was like, you should apply. After she heard my story, she was like, you should apply. I don't think you'll win, but I think you'll have like the ability to, you know, go really far in the competition, because my business is not as giant. Like the company that won was Winnebago this year. So I mean, like, right. You know, generally it's like $1 billion companies.
Crazy.
We're not quite $1 billion. yeah, but like, you know, it was just amazing. It's a really interesting experience. You have to do this really in-depth application. There's a financials check, and then they come and do a 2 or 3 hour interview with you at your office. Then you travel, and then you have to interview with 3 different panels and do a filmed interview. Like, it's extremely thorough. And I think that, you know, we have like in our company, we're probably like 98% either women or minority. And so we just have a lot of things kind of going for us. We care about people. We've got a fun story of, you know, like figuring out how to make it happen and taking a big risk and it paying off. And then we've got great customers that are well-known brands. So I think it was a good natural fit for us to kind of be there. And then, of course, I'm always talking about core values and leadership, and I think that's really important for any company. So I think those kind of all work together. If you have anyone who's interested in applying, I would make sure they do all those things that I just said. And what's come from it has been amazing. Like, even though it's been a very difficult banking environment, we've had very aggressive opportunities for funding that have come from banks and from private equity partners. You know, they just have a great network that kind of comes together to support those entrepreneurs that are winners. And we won for the Southeast. And then there's like a national and an international. And so the Southeast was super exciting, because again, I didn't think I was going to win. In fact, all the people that I knew that had been in it before that were in my network, as well as people outside of it, they were all like, you're never going to win the first time, right? But, you know, go ahead and try and learn the process. And then I won, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever. And it really was. It's been a great experience.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah. I mean, and what a great program, great visibility and connection, right? Network. It started with knowing someone that suggested you apply. How cool is that? Really, really cool, Courtney. Before we wrap up, I wanted to ask, share maybe 2 or 3 of your biggest lessons learned as an entrepreneur for others that are listening. You know, many people are in this space, maybe not exactly what you do, but would partner with you, but are launching brands, growing brands, big and small. What would be 2 or 3 pieces of advice you'd offer to them?
I think as a woman, I would say, don't be afraid of giving feedback and being direct with what you say, what you mean, and be confident about it. And then I've got 2 books I would recommend that will say it a lot better than me. I've got this one right here. It's called Obsessed. It is phenomenal. It is so really? Good.
Okay. Hold on. Hold it back up. Hold it back up. Let's see. Yeah. You guys can't see it. I can see it. So it's Obsessed by Emily Hayward. Go ahead.
Yep. And I mean, like, the first part of that book talks about we're all going to die, and you have to figure out how to tell people a story about your brand that relates back to the fact that you're giving them time back in their life that to enjoy in some way. Like, we're all going to die. Therefore, I need a fast car so I can get my job done faster, so I have more time off, or, you know, whatever. But just brilliant book. And then another book that I think is absolutely phenomenal. It's a harder read. It's not quite as much fun, but it's this one, which is called The Obstacle is the Way. And if you're an entrepreneur, you get kicked in the teeth 25 times a day, except for that one day where you're getting kicked in the teeth and in the gut. And so you have to figure out how to constantly be dealing with negative things and challenges and take those and turn them into opportunities.
That's amazing. Obstacle in the Way by Ryan Holiday, by the way. You guys can pull that up. That's awesome. That's great advice.
And I got one more for you. I got one more. It's called The Motive, and it's by Patrick Lencioni.
A very familiar author.
Yes, he's phenomenal. And that book basically says, I'm going to sum it up in a sentence, which is, just because you're the owner or the CEO does not give you the right to only do what you want to do. You have to do what the business needs you to do. And very often that is giving people feedback that's going to be awkward. So get used to it. Oh my God.
Okay. I mean, that is great. It's so funny. Like, you know, I do all these interviews, and occasionally I get book recommendations, but 3 right there. I mean, I haven't read any of those 3, I hate to say, but I am going to download those today. That's very cool, Courtney. Awesome. All right. One last question. Renewal Logistics. Like, how'd you come up with the name?
Well, we were doing returns for, I can tell you a little bit about this. We were doing returns for Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger, Carter's, Tory Burch, a lot of different companies that are here based in Georgia. And, you know, it was an opportunity for them to take stock that was just completely dead and put it back into their system to be able to sell it again. And so it was like, okay, well, we're renewing these items. And at that point, we needed to come up with a, we needed to be separate from our insurance restoration business. And so that's, it made sense at that point for us to, you know, and I just think in general, like, you know, you're always, you know, you hope you're going to have repeat orders from customers. And so it's kind of a play on that.
I love it. Like, very, very cool.
Renew your subscription.
I always love to ask. There's usually some interesting story behind it. Courtney, so cool to have you on. I mean, like, you could be a great mentor to so many of our guests and those that listen to our show. How could they reach out to you? How can they engage with you? How can they, like, learn more about your services, et cetera?
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I would absolutely love to mentor anyone that's interested. You can hear I love to talk and tell stories.
I love it.
And so you can find me on renewallogistics.com. So there's an S on the end of logistics. And I'm also on LinkedIn a lot, and I'm on Instagram. So on LinkedIn, it's Courtney D. Folk. And then on Instagram, it's Courtney D. Folk as well. And we also have, you know, like company pages on those two social media platforms.
I love it. So cool having you here and as part of our network. And man, I just think it's so such a great story, what you've built and the potential for growth and how you're helping brands to get in front of retailers and do it in a way that makes sense, right? Make it so they can actually make money on their products and grow. So good having you on. And we got to have you back on down the road.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. I would love to. And thanks for having me. It was great. So fun.
The Contender Cast is powered by Contender Brands and is the top global consumer industries entrepreneurship podcast. You can find additional Contender Cast episodes on worldwide podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, iHeartMedia, YouTube, and other preferred podcast platforms. If you would like to be a guest on the Contender Cast, connect with us at contendercast.com. This is Brian Benson reminding you that every winner started as a contender.